Welcome back to New Books in Latino Studies. I'm David James Gonzalez, the host of today's podcast, and I am pleased to be joined by Omar Valerio Jimenez, Santiago Vaquera Vasquez, and Claire Fox, editors of the Latino Midwest Reader, published by the University of Illinois Press in 2017. Dr. Omar Valerio Jimenez is an associate professor of history at the University of Texas at San Antonio and the author of River of Hope, Forging Identity and Nation in the Rio Grande Borderlands. Dr. Santiago Vaquera Vasquez is an associate professor of Hispanic Southwest Studies at the University of New Mexico and the author of One Day, I'll Tell You the Things I've Seen, Stories. And Dr. Claire F. Fox is professor in the departments of English and Spanish and Portuguese at the University of Iowa and the author of Making Art Pan-American, Cultural Policy and the Cold War. Hello, Omar, Santiago, and Claire, and welcome to New Books in Latino Studies.
Thank you.
Hi.
Great. So I'd like to start today just by giving each of you a couple minutes to introduce yourselves and tell our audience a little bit about your personal and professional backgrounds. Omar, how about you lead us off, and then we'll continue with Santiago and Claire.
Okay, thank you. Well, I'm originally from Texas. I was born in Mexico, but came over when I was quite young, raised here. And so I'm glad to be back in Texas after being in a few other places. I taught at Cal State Long Beach and at the University of Iowa, and now I'm at the University of Texas at San Antonio. I teach history courses mainly in Latino history, Mexican-American history, borderlands, the American West, and immigration. And also I started teaching classes on race in the United States. I'm really excited about our book, our anthology. It started many years ago when I was at the University of Iowa and when Santiago was there as well. And we basically got together to try to promote the study of Latinos in the Midwest. And we thought we started with a symposium and then eventually it turned into a summer seminar. Maybe we can discuss this later. But anyway, but it was basically our attempt to try to get scholars together and to promote Latino studies in the Midwest, because being at a university like the University of Iowa, where there weren't that many Latino studies scholars, at least at the time, sometimes you feel a little bit isolated, and it was a good sort of way of promoting Latino studies. We didn't have a Latino studies program there. It was a way of promoting it and eventually building sort of momentum to eventually create a Latino studies minor. It was also part of my effort to sort of be involved in research on Latinos in the Midwest. And I started doing a little bit of that. I published an article about that, and I did a little bit of research and also got students interested in doing research on the topic. And I'll turn it over to Santiago now.
Hi, thanks for the invitation. I'm really happy to be able to talk about the book. I'm also not from the Midwest. I'm originally from California, from Northern California, but I've taught at a number of universities across the United States and in Europe. I was at the University of Iowa when this project was born. I'm currently at the University of New Mexico, but I just came back from a Fulbright year teaching Latino studies in Turkey, in Ankara. Wow. And so for me, this project was really fascinating because before moving to Iowa, I was living in Pennsylvania teaching at Penn State. And I remember that when I first moved to Iowa to join the Department of Spanish and Portuguese, before I moved, my people I'd meet in on the streets at Penn State would tell me, "Hey, well, you know, Iowa, it's 95% white," and I thought, "Wow, okay, I don't understand what that means, guys." Because Pennsylvania seemed pretty monodiverse at the time. But after a week of living in Iowa City, people would come up to me and say, "Well, you know, Iowa is now 97%. It's actually 93% white." And I thought, "Wow, well, you know, my vote counted." So it was one of those things that I found fascinating living in Iowa and living in the Midwest. And so when Omar and I were teaching one semester a course on borderlands, he came to me with this project, this idea of putting together a symposium on Latinos in the Midwest. I thought this was absolutely great because in the years that I've been living there, I started looking at these different communities. And my focus is creative writing. and cultural production. So I was really interested in the way that these local communities were sort of creating their own sense of home. And so looking at small communities like West Liberty, Iowa, I used to say that if it were closer to Iowa City, I probably would live there, aside from the fact that, you know, the commute was awful and the winters are terrible in the Midwest. But it was one of these things that I found really, really, really great and a really fascinating project to work on for many reasons, right? For the way that I look at, say, the evolution of a Chicano literature or Chicano cultural production. I teach a course currently here at the University of New Mexico that I call Movements in Chicano Literature, and where I look at the way that Chicano literature first starts off as a sort of a regional literature, and then it moves to a national literature. And my focus, what I was doing in Turkey, is looking at it as a transnational literature. And so by looking at these different aspects of Chicano, Latino cultural production, I'm interested in seeing how it has evolved and changed. And the Midwest, I thought, was a great site for looking at rethinking what does it mean to be Latino in the United States.
Gotcha. Great. Claire?
I came to the University of Iowa in 2001. And like my co-editors, I'm not from the Midwest. I grew up in Southern California, although my parents are Midwesterners. And I think that in some ways helped me to understand some of the local dynamics here in Iowa. I teach literature and cultures of the Americas, and my research has tended to focus on visual art and visual culture. My doctoral research was on the U.S.-Mexico border, representations of the border in the era of NAFTA, which dates me, I think, in a lot of ways. And when I came to Iowa, you know, the kind of border studies as a regional area studies really wasn't as meaningful or impactful for the Midwestern students as it had been for the Californian students I had taught previously. And I felt I needed to adapt my teaching to reach my students here in Iowa. And that kind of led me to explore the Latino Midwest as a phenomenon. And in fact, the Midwest and agricultural industries in the Midwest have been profoundly affected by NAFTA. So it wasn't a stretch to start thinking along those lines. And I connected with Omar and Santiago after they had already developed this proposal to run a symposium or some series of events on the Latino Midwest, and was completely interested in it. And I miss both of them very much. But since they left the University of Iowa, they have created something that is continuing to develop. I think the kind of studies of the Latino Midwest are gaining momentum, and now I'm part of an interinstitutional research collaborative that is also investigating the Latino Midwest.
Right. Thank you for that. And that's we started to get into how this project came together, and, you know, from the three of you, you know, being colleagues, and then the symposium. So why don't you fill in a bit more details for us about where did it go from the symposium? After the symposium was put together, how did we then get the book that we have now in our hands?
Okay, I'll say a few things. The symposium was held in was it October?
Yes, 2012.
Okay, I was looking at my CV because I don't remember anymore. anyway, so it was held in October 2012, and it was a 3-day symposium. It was great. You know, we had lots of scholars, artists, writers, singers come and give presentations, and it was like a high for me because, you know, one of the things that Santiago mentioned also is you know, when I moved to the Midwest, from Long Beach, California, one of my friends who's a Chicano scholar also made this little quip about, you know, oh, there's Chicanos in the Midwest. And I said, of course they are, you know. And, you know, it's one of those kind of things where people think that there is no sort of history. And one of the big things that we wanted to say to make a, you know, one of the, our sort of main arguments is that Latinos are not new to the Midwest.
Right.
And so when I was there, one of the first sort of experiences that I remember, I taught a Mexican American history class. And at the time, since I was coming from Long Beach, I called it Chicano history class. And I realized soon after that, as soon as I got there, that some people, many people, students and staff, didn't know what a Chicano was. Right. Exactly. And so I had to change it. But anyway, but I remember sort of the excitement of some of the Latino students in that first class, listening and hearing about, you know, Mexican American history, but particularly when I included material about Iowa or the Midwest. And when I got to the University of Iowa, it was 2006. There was a project there that is still going on, but the librarians were giving presentations. It was the Iowa Women's Archive began this project to collect material about Latinas in the Midwest, and it's the Mujeres Latinas Project. And I heard a presentation by some of the archivists and librarians involved in this project, and I quickly contacted them. I was still teaching. I was in the midst of the semester, and so I incorporated some of the material they gave me. And I remember distinctly that one student asking me, I was showing some photos of some of the communities in Iowa, in eastern Iowa, along the Iowa-Illinois border. And this one student who had never spoken in class raised her hand and she said, "Can you back up to a few photos behind, before where it is right now, the PowerPoint?" And I said, "Sure." And I backed it up and she said, "That woman right there, that's my grandmother." Wow. And this woman, the student, had never spoken in class. And after that, she started speaking. And I just, that experience right there cemented to, in me, in my understanding, that I had to include more material from the Midwest in my classes, because, students were going to get more, basically invested in the material if they knew about what was going on, about the history of Mexican Americans or Latinos in general in the Midwest. So, anyway, back to your original question. I'm sorry I got diverted, but after the symposium, we basically, the Obermann Center, and we should mention the Obermann Center and give them props because they provided a lot of the funding for the symposium and for the seminars, the summer seminar. We decided we wanted to put together sort of an anthology, a teachable anthology, something that we could be used in the classroom. Because one of the things as instructors, all three of us struggled with is finding material on Latinos in the Midwest mm-hmm. to use in our course. And so we put together another basically proposal to host a summer seminar where we would invite scholars, different scholars, some of the ones who had been in the symposium, but others that perhaps couldn't come to the symposium, but we wanted to include anyway, host them for a 1-week seminar where they would come and basically bring essays that they thought might be suitable for this anthology. And then we would workshop them and then sort of exchange ideas on how to improve them, what to do to make them sort of more readable, more easily accessible for students. And it was a wonderful seminar. I mean, both the symposium and the summer seminar were just wonderful experiences for me.
Yeah, I wanted to work off of what Omar had said. We actually worked on this project for, I don't know, about a year before the symposium. We sat down and we decided to go as big as possible. So we spent, I can't remember, maybe about a year writing grant proposals.
Wow.
To everybody we could think of. We got as many of the different groups on campus involved. We were able to get the auditorium organizers who organized like a series of plays and concerts to bring Lila Downs. And so she closed our symposium. We got the students who organized a speaker series to bring Juno Diaz to be a part of one of our series. We had Luis Alberto Urrea, who is a Chicano writer who lives in the Midwest. He lives in Chicago to give one of the final events. And it was really truly an amazing semester because the symposium was in August over 4 days, but it really was an event that a series of events that took place throughout the semester. It was my final semester at the University of Iowa, and I just thought it was like a great way to go. And as Omar said, right? I mean, I think that the most important thing about looking at this project is my work in general looks at this notion of shared spaces, right? Communities and context. And the idea of looking at the Midwest as a shared space where we have both a community that has been there, right? Latinos have been there since the 19th century, but is also new as we see the demographic growth in the since 2000. So there is this, it's both a community that's old and new at the same time. And that notion of how these communities come together and build their connections to place, I thought was key for looking at these at this project. And the book itself, I think, is really just great because we have scholars who are working in very different areas, right, from ethnic studies to labor history to linguistics. And I think it came out to be a beautiful book, and I hope it's inviting for more projects.
Mm-hmm. Oh, certainly. Yeah. I think that's a great point. Go ahead, Claire.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, you know, we were extremely ambitious. I think if we maybe had known what we were getting ourselves into, we would have checked ourselves a bit, but. We did it big. And the irony was that Iowa at the time was the only Big Ten institution that did not have an academic Latino studies program.
Mm. Right.
So there were some really wonderful outcomes of our initiative. First of all, the workshop that Omar referenced, where we brought authors together for a week of peer review of one another's book chapters leading to the publication, mm-hmm. was really a great experience. And it was a lot of fun and a collaborative venture where it really dissolved the boundaries between the contributors and the editors. Right. We were all kind of mutually invested in making one another's work excellent and making the volume kind of coherent. Mm-hmm. And then after that was over and the publication was entering production, Latino Studies at UI was born. So we're now a program in its third year of existence, and it's thriving, which is wonderful. And there are a number of professors who are contributing to it. And meanwhile, we're working on a website, a companion website for the Latino Midwest Reader.
Great.
So hopefully that will launch within this year. Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of new academic research projects underway in the field. So I think this is just kind of a signpost in a research area that's starting to coalesce.
Thank you for that. Now, that is all that context is so helpful, particularly for those, I think, that are listening within academia that have probably similar, you know, thoughts on how to create, you know, mm-hmm. projects like this, collaborative projects. And as you mentioned, it is big, I'm amazed. I think there's, according to my mm-hmm. count, 17 chapters plus the intro and the foreword. So,
yeah,
to say ambitious is the least, I think, in this. And the collection of scholars is just really, you know, it's staggering. So it is a great piece, and it looks great. It's got a great cover. It just, you know, it feels the right size. So just kudos to all of you.
Santiago designed the cover, by the way.
Is that right?
No, there's a story.
Yes, he did.
Gotcha. Were you going to add something on that, Santiago?
No, on the cover and on the book. No, I agree with you. I think the book came out to be a really just amazing, and I'm so happy to have been able to work with Claire and Omar. In fact, this is probably going to date me. I've told this to Claire before, but her book, the book on the border, the U.S.-Mexico border, really changed my life. I was finishing grad school at the time. I was writing my dissertation when it came out, and I just thought, this is amazing. So for the opportunity to go teach at Iowa and to be one of Claire's colleagues was great. And then meeting Omar in my first year, I just thought, wow, this is a really great group. And for a while, I thought Iowa City was just the most amazing collection of of colleagues ever.
Right.
You and Omar are still honorary Iowa Cityans. We miss you a lot here.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, no, Jasper misses it a lot. Jasper still talks about wanting to go back as much as he can. And I keep telling you, hopefully someday we can go back for a visit.
Yeah, oh, definitely. Yeah, we want to organize something around the release of the book. I think locally, if anecdotes are evidence, I think it's making a splash here.
Great.
That's great. Let's talk a bit about the organization of the book, and in particular, there's these two phrases that I believe you bring up in the introduction. The first is "aquí estamos," that is "here we are," right, and "cuando llegamos," when we arrive. That these two phrases mm-hmm. capture the dual emphases of the collection. Can you expound on that? How the organization of the book kind of follows those two phrases? And who, you know, I don't know if we want to begin with Omar or Santiago, just we can go.
I would say either Santiago or Claire, but I think Claire should probably speak to this.
Yeah. Well, right, the Archaeostops, you know, that comes from more specifically from one of the last essays in the volume by Rebecca Schreiber, who worked on Chicago's Immigrant Youth Justice League and the ways in which the immigrant rights movement in the Midwest and throughout the United States is using social media and video. And she comments on one video in which an activist who is undocumented asserts her presence by saying, "Aquí estoy," here I am, you know. So "here we are" is a sort of way of thinking about the Latino Midwest and its lack of visibility or visibility within the field, a kind of claiming presence. And then "cuando lleguemos" is a line from Tomás Rivera's "Y no se lo trago la tierra." It's a sort of refrain in one of the vignettes there that is uttered by a number of trans-regional migrants who are traveling from South Texas to the Midwest in a truck, and they're standing through the whole journey, and they're all collectively thinking in their stream of consciousness about their aspiration upon arrival. So both of those phrases, I think, capture some of the tension around wanting to assert the Latino Midwest as an important region for the broader field imaginary within Latino studies.
Gotcha. And the sections seem to follow that in a way, as in the first section, the Browning of the Midwest seems to, you know, focus a bit. I mean, of course, migration and demographic change are themes throughout the whole book, but it seems to signal that type of, you know, arrival, you know, within the right. "Aquí estamos," you know, phrase. And then, you know, the second section that comes up with the emphasis on the long history of contributions to industry through Latino labor and community building, right? Anything that Omar or Santiago, you want to add to that in regards to the organization of the book?
No, I think Clara covered it very well, right? And I think you hit the key point, right? The way that we set it up as to look at this community that is both old and new, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think that's also that is also encapsulated in these two phrases.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, it sort of pushes back both, you know, against scholarship as well as you know, I think just a collective more popular consciousness and, you know, the general, you know, American public hearing of Latinos in the U.S. Of course, even, you know, amongst Latinos, you know, in the Southwest, you get the refrains that some of you have mentioned, right? There are Mexicanos or the Latinos in the Midwest, what? Or in that town or this town. And there is both at the same time, right? That long history stretching back, you know, over a century, right, of migration pathways and networks into the Midwest. But, you know, continually due to changes, as, you know, Claire, you mentioned, as was mentioned about your work, you know, through NAFTA, particularly more recently, these trends and networks have expanded, you know, so there is both that sense of old and new going on amongst the Latino community. And you know, to use again for we can get into the use of that phrase later, Latino and Latinidad itself. So mm-hmm. also just mentioned there are the few other sections. I mentioned the first two sections. There's also a section on, you know, education, experiences and struggles on, section fours on, culture, right, within Latino mm-hmm. culture within the Midwest. And then there's another section, the last one, the fifth one, movimientos on social political activism. So it seemed to hit kind of all the big narrative threads that at least mm-hmm. I was looking for, and I think a number of people are looking for in such a collection. If we could, I'd like to switch to also and talk about what I believe is one of the central arguments if we're looking at this work collectively. You mentioned the first was the goal to challenge the notion that Latinos are not newcomers, right, to the Midwest. They've been here for quite a while. But also that these essays collectively emphasize and make a point towards the distinctiveness of the Midwest as, a site and space for, you know, the Latino community, right? And that experience within the United States. So my question is, can we talk about this? What is it that makes the Midwest unique among other regions, you know, particularly, you know, where so much of the scholarship emerges about the Southwest and now even a lot in the last, you know, couple of decades has been from the Northeast. And of course, we even have now, right, the scholarship on La Nueva South, right? So we have all these different regions. So what is it that makes the Midwest unique within the Latino experience?
Let me say a few things about that. One of the things that that I was very pleasantly surprised to learn is just how long Latinos have been in the Midwest, but also just the different historical moments that have taken place in the Midwest related to Latinos that I was unaware of. So, from something tragic like, you know, Richie Valens' death in Iowa, mm-hmm. to things like Tomas Rivera, you know, setting some of his stories in the Midwest, to the origins of some of the Puerto Rican activists in Chicago, the Young Lords that Daryl Wenzer Serrano talks about in our book, describes, and also I think Claire can correct me if I'm wrong about this, but the journal Chicano Riqueña began mm-hmm. in the Midwest, and I think part of was that right, Claire?
Yeah.
Okay.
Indiana.
Right. And I think part of what it showed me, and I think in our discussions with Claire and Santiago and with the other scholars, is that, you know, the Midwest is a region that not only have Latinos been there for a long time, and, you know, Mexicanos were probably the first to arrive in the region, but eventually Puerto Ricans and other Latino groups, but more importantly, it's a site where no one Latino population like Mexicanos or Puerto Ricans has dominated to the extent it has in the Southwest, or for example, Puerto Ricans in New York City or Cuban Americans in Miami and Florida. And so there's been this mixing. And I think mm-hmm. this is what Frances Aparicio sort of discusses in her afterword. But there's been this mixing for a very long time. And Lilia Fernandez also discusses it in her chapter and in her book. And I think that mixing has been very productive and has led to sort of a distinct experience, because Mexicanos or Puerto Ricans haven't felt like, oh, we're the main, you know, group here of Latinos, and so they've interacted with one another, I think, in unique ways that perhaps it does occur in other parts of the U.S. Southwest, but I think it occurs to a more profound and more deep degree in the Midwest.
Mm-hmm. And I think that another aspect of this notion of the Midwest is sort of being unique. I'm not so sure that I would tend to shy away from the use of the word unique, but it is one of these overlooked spaces mm-hmm. in America, right? Because we somehow sort of, even when we talk about the Midwest, we consider it sort of the flyover states, the square states. It's all like this big, vast nothing in the last election, of course, has now become a topic. But when I first moved there, right, there was this sort of the sense of that it was sort of an unknown, right? And mm-hmm. and I think this is that's one of the things that I always liked about living in Iowa is discovering, right, the history of our community. Now, my first contact actually with Latinos in the Midwest was a lot earlier than 2007. In 1994, I was invited to a conference at the University of Kansas. And so I was in Kansas City for a day just walking around, and I ended up in this neighborhood where I kept seeing taquerias, and and there was history of Mexicanos in the city. And I thought, wow, how did we end up here? And that's when I started thinking at that moment. And then I realized, right, it was because of the railroads and the cattle drives. And that always stuck with me. And so moving back to Iowa in 2007, I mean, I had that sort of in my memory bank.
I think we're walking a tightrope in our anthology between kind of claiming distinctiveness and uniqueness for the Midwest, but also wanting scholars from the coast to integrate Midwestern stories into coverage of the field or representations of the field. Right. So, you know, what Omar was saying, I think, about the Midwest, that the Mexican and Mexican-American population are the majority Latino demographic. However, in our anthology, one of the things that comes out is that that demographic tends to kind of organize around a diasporic imaginary rather than a kind of occupied territory imaginary. And that alone, I think, is conducive to inter-Latino interactions on a different plane. For example, if you go to a lot of regional ethnic festivals, Latino festivals in the Midwest, you see the flags of all of the Latin American nations flying there. Mm-hmm. And there are these sort of pan-Latino musical acts that perform and stuff like that. And I think another distinctive feature of the Midwest is the rural and small town Latino communities. And ways in which I think Latinos are kind of reviving dying agricultural communities in a lot of parts of the Midwest.
Yeah, no, I find that interesting. That, I mean, that particularly that the urban, you know, rural experience, because this is one of those things where there are right commonalities and then distinctives or distinctions, right, between these different regions that we're talking about. And so we know that, of course, you know, the history of Latinos and has this, you know, kind of that dual emphasis of, you know, experiences in both of those places, whether it be urban or rural. But as you mentioned, in a bit of scholarship coming out now is about how Latinos, particularly on the coasts, are reviving urban areas or areas that have urbanized, you know, in the post-war era. You mentioned this revitalization of rural space. And I think that maybe perhaps that points to one of those unique and distinctions, you know, that has a commonality as we talk about, again, railroads and agricultural labor and things of that sort, where that kind of establish these early networks. But then, you know, what we see a little bit of departures in these narratives, perhaps how, you know, that transition and or that experience in space, as well as the trajectory over time, how that differs. Maybe that's where we find some of that uniqueness. Does that sound about right? The other interesting thing that you pointed out is, and that I think is pointed out in the introduction also, is, and I think this points to, you know, what does this collection of essays do towards, you know, scholars theorizing, right, about the Latino experience? We all know that the border, of course, is an important concept, you know, the border, borderlands, that's both as a metaphor and, that is used often in scholarship, but then also as a concept that's used to, really work through our scholarship. There was mentioned here that the Midwest is a type of, you know, border space between, again, the coasts and the coastal experiences of Caribbean, primarily, again, Caribbean and Mexican origin groups. Would you care to comment on that a bit more? Maybe just to explain that, work that through a little bit more for us.
No, I think you're right. Right. I mean, if this is the Midwest is kind of a type of another way of borderlands, which is it's a contact zone. Right? And I think this is what many of our writers pointed out. Right. I like what Omar and Claire said about the fact that what makes the one aspect that makes the Midwest sort of distinct is this notion that there's no one group that is over others, right? So you have sort of like this Latinidad thing going on. So, I think that when we look at the small towns, where the small farming communities, or the meatpacking towns where we have large Latino populations, or even look at a city like Chicago, you start to see this really interesting a mixing that it's not problematic free, right? Because I mean, I have stories, but I think that that I think is a really fascinating way that we see how communities start to mesh together. How do they share the space?
Yeah, I mean, one thing I wanted to add is, I think in terms of similarities, obviously, between Latinos in the Midwest and elsewhere, you know, the Latino communities are facing some of the same challenges, you know, like in terms of poverty, you know, political exclusion, anti-immigrant policies and so forth, and a desire to obtain an education and such. But I think I should emphasize that I think Latino communities in the Midwest, like in other areas, are really committed to cultural adaptation to the region that where they're living. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it surprised me in many ways, you know, learning about certain communities in Iowa, for example, or Illinois, just how much investment Latinos have in their communities. And some of them, obviously, because they've been there several generations, like the people that I met in West Liberty have been there several generations, but, you know, their ancestors hail from Mexico or from South Texas, you know, and they ended up there because they were following the crops, right, or railroads in some cases. But I think in terms of differences, I think Claire said it really well, and that's that this idea of a diasporic community, of the diaspora, and that how Latinos can relate to one another. And one of the things I think happens elsewhere, right, is there are these mixing of Latino populations, like Mexicans marrying Puerto Ricans and Puerto Ricans marrying Cubans and so forth, right? But I think in the Midwest, you have a large that happens often enough that you have, you know, as Frances Aparicio mentions, you have these new identities being created of Mexicans or Bolivian Cubans or Mexican Colombians, and because there's enough of them, you know, that right. gets created. And I think no one group, no one national origin group predominates, you know, to a large degree, that you have these communities interacting with one another, cooperating, building alliances with another more. But also, obviously, there's tensions as well, right? But I think they're able to, you know, certain groups are able to see the commonalities in their struggles and their struggle to adapt and their struggle to overcome, you know, local discrimination or local problems. One of the things that I felt very, very good about is that I think our volume does speak to some of these issues. You know, couldn't, you know, like you mentioned, there's many, many essays, you know, 17 essays. I hadn't counted that, but one of the things that, you know, I was contacted after the book came out, and they asked, someone asked me, a scholar asked me, so why isn't there any article on Missouri? And I said, well, we couldn't include anything, right? Mm-hmm. But like Santiago mentioned a little bit earlier, I hope that this leads to perhaps other projects, and maybe another project is another anthology later on down the line that someone else can take up, or maybe us or whatever. But in terms of, there's a lot of research that can get published, and a lot of new recent scholars, you know, recent PhDs that are working on some fascinating topics that we couldn't really include because, you know, they were working on their dissertations or their first books. And most of the scholars who published here are, you know, already have books out and, you know, had secure tenure, and so they could contribute to something like this. Right. But I'm sure that there's just a lot more scholarship that can be done and that can be published on Latinos in the Midwest.
Certainly. And you know, your comments got me thinking, you know, about that shared experience in space. But another point that's made, you know, again, throughout the book, but really emphasized in the introduction and as well as Frances Aparicio's afterword, right, is the notion of how this affects the theory of identity formation among Latinos, and that it's presumed, right, that Latino as an identity, or Latinidad, right, as it's generally discussed, speaks to a sense of shared or common cultural values and heritage, right? That's what unites the Latinos. It's the Spanish language, or it's certain cultural experiences and traits, commonalities and celebrations or food, whatever that may be. But this, collection speaks more to the emphasis on a shared lived experience as a racialized and politicized group, right? That is, the basis of Latino identity in the Midwest. Mm-hmm. Would you, any of you care to comment a bit on that and, for our audience, explain it a bit further?
I think we definitely support what you just said, that Latinidad is more a product of contingencies than some pre-given essence, a cultural essence that expresses itself. And that, you know, Santiago's creative work kind of explores this, I think. But I also wanted to say that it doesn't just stop with interactions among Latinos or between Latinos and Anglos. One of the things that we were very aware of when we were working on this was that there are longstanding histories of Latinos interacting with African Americans in Chicago mm-hmm. and Detroit and other major Midwestern cities, and being really important to the industrialization of these. And also in rural and small town areas, Latinos are working alongside Eastern European immigrants, South Asian immigrants, Africans. So there's a lot of, what Santiago called newness. There's a lot of kind of new contact zones that are coalescing or, being created in out of the way places.
Well, thank you for that. Thank you for the comments. I appreciate the time you've provided us, and particularly our audience. I wanted to give a moment as we wrap things up for each of you to share a bit of what it is you're currently working on, aside from perhaps promoting this or planning reunions in regards to the collection of essays that we have in front of us. If you wouldn't mind, I don't know, Claire, if you want to kick us off, what's something you're working on now?
Well, actually, a few of the alums of the Latino Midwest Reader are now active in a new collaborative research initiative. For a while, they were calling it Latino Midwest 2.0, but the official name is Latinx Placemaking in the Midwest, Creating Sustainable Worlds. Hmm. And the director of that project is Teresa Delgadillo at Ohio State University, and also Jerry Cadava and Ramon Rivera Cervera at Northwestern University are co-PIs on the project. And with a group of about 15 Latino Midwest scholars of all ranks, they're looking at forms of cultural expression and placemaking. So looking at festivals, Latino cultural centers and community organizations, the arts, literature, film, and performance. And I expect that will produce a wave of new research projects that builds productively on the reader.
Great. Thank you. Omar?
I'm not currently pursuing research on the Midwest, but my current project has a connection a bit. When I was driving to Iowa City from Long Beach along I-80 between Des Moines and Iowa City, I all of a sudden saw a sign for a place called Montezuma. And I thought, this is weird. Why would a place be called Montezuma in the middle of Iowa? And, turned out it had to do with the U.S.-Mexican War. And there's several place names in Iowa related to the U.S.-Mexican War. And that leads me to right now I'm involved in two projects. One is I'm working on a book on the history and memory of the U.S.-Mexico War as it relates to civil rights activism among Chicanos, and how the memory of the war and of the treaty has led, over generations, activists to cite the treaty, but also to describe how the the sort of the place of Mexican Americans in U.S. society has a lot to do with that war and what happened as a result of the war. But the other thing I'm working on in sort of a long-term project is a digital humanities project on sort of using digital mapping to look at place names like in Iowa. You know, like there's three counties, for example, that are named after battles in the U.S.-Mexican War, and sort of looking at how these place names are distributed across the U.S., not just in the Southwest, but in the Midwest and in other places, and how, you know, they're sort of linked to the U.S.-Mexican War and what it says about how we remember the war or how we forget, you know, certain aspects of the war.
Great. That sounds great. Santiago?
Wow. Both those projects sound fantastic. I'm actually doing more creative writing. So my current big project is finishing a new collection of stories, partially set in Turkey, some of them set in the Midwest, some of them set in Mexico, some of the stories set in Mexico. The base of the story is my sister, one of my sisters passed away in 2010, and she had lived in Turkey for about a year in the mid-90s. And so I've been thinking about this question, you know, what does it take a young Mexican-American to leave her country and to go to the other side of the world and to live for a year? And so I've been that's been sort of one of it's one of the underlying elements of the story. It's about family and connections across place. As I said, some of the stories are set in the Midwest, when the main character is a writer who's been living in the Midwest for a number of years and is trying to come to terms with this loss. And I think more recently or more currently, the other project that I have to absolutely finish within the next couple of months is another book of short stories in Spanish, but that's sort of a detective fiction set on the U.S.-Mexico border. I don't know if I want to finish it, but I don't know if I'm going to be able to make the deadline, but that is the right now.
Well, we'll all send you good vibes, you know, so you can get it done on time.
But. Thanks.
Well, thank you all of you for sharing. All those projects sound great.
Thank
we'll
you.
Be sure to watch. And thanks again for participating in this conversation.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for tuning in to New Books in Latino Studies. I'm David James Gonzalez, the host of today's podcast, and I hope you've enjoyed my conversation today with Omar Valerio Jimenez, Santiago Vaquera Vasquez, and Claire F. Fox, editors of the Latino Midwest Reader, published by the University of Illinois Press in 2017. If you'd like to get in contact with me, please send an email to djgonzophd@gmail.com. I also invite you to follow the New Books Network's social media pages on Facebook and Twitter. And of course, please like and comment on this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. Thank you.